This is Wine and Dine in LA with Anoush, where I talk about wine in a fun and approachable way and bring you all insights of the world of wine. Another episode of Wine and Dine in LA with Anoush. Today, I am located in a very interesting part of Los Angeles. We're in Glendale. It's an industrial area where we are sitting with a gentleman whose name is Van. He's a garagist, distiller, and an artist. Yes. Hi, Van. Thank you so much for having us.
Hi. Thanks for coming.
We also have with us Irina Panamarenko, whom I have interviewed numerous times. She is a sommelier and conic educator, and she's here. Well, I'm here because of her. She has tasted the distillates that Van made, and she was very impressed. And she said, we have to go and try and see how he does this, where he does it, and taste some more. And so we're here. Thank you, Irina, for coming.
Thank you for inviting me again, and I'm very happy to be here and see the process.
Excellent. So before we go into talking about the distillates, Van, why don't you tell us where you're from? Actually, I'd love you to tell what your name means, and then we can go into the other conversations about art and about the distillates.
So you want me to tell me what my name is first, and or to tell you where I'm from?
I think they would be both intertwined, right?
Well, my name means shield, something that you shield yourself with, protect yourself. And I was born in Armenia. I lived there until the end of the Soviet era. I moved to U.S. in 1994.
So right during those dark periods that Armenia was going through.
Yeah, actually I lived through 3 years of those dark and cold and very unpleasant years, especially winters.
So did I. I grew up through that. So yeah. Is that where the desire to draw and distill came, or that was before?
Oh, no. I was painting drawing since childhood. That came probably from my uncle and my grandfather. They're architects, but also my father is an art collector. So our apartment was full of paintings from ceiling to the floor.
Oh,
all
wow.
The walls. Yeah, we had probably few hundred paintings in our apartment. So I grew up watching that constantly, seeing the painting on the paintings on the walls. And so I started very early. The distilling actually was kind of an interesting story because even when I was younger, you know, when I saw somebody distilling it, I was kind of drawn to that. I would go and watch
mm-hmm. as a kid. In Armenia?
In Armenia.
Yeah, like in so the villages,
in
I
the
would
villages.
Assume.
Yeah, in the villages. So I would watch, I would maybe ask some questions, why is it running here, why is it, what's happening here. But about around that time, I think it was 89 or 90 when the Soviet government collapsed and the last first secretary of Armenia was displaced, Demirchan.
Yep.
Karen. And he lost pretty much everything that he had at that point. And apparently my friend's cousin bought his farm. That was not officially his, but it was his.
A fruit farm?
No, a farm like a farmland.
Oh, okay.
The farmland had animals like, you know, cows, pigs, a farm.
Yeah.
So, and he calls me up one day and says that, you know, I have a half a ton of port sitting in a container in the middle of
like
the field.
Like port wine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the middle
port
of the
Port
wine
Lavagun.
Yeah. No, well, I'm not sure which one it was,
which
but
one?
It was
okay.
So, and he says, come do something with it or I'm going to just open the valve and just, you know,
dump
it out.
Uh-huh.
And my friend said, don't do anything, we'll be there in like 30 minutes.
How old were you?
I was like 20, 21, something
okay.
like this. So he was, my friend was older, about, he was in his 30s, but, you know, I was young. So we jumped in a car, drove to Oshakan, where that farmland was. So, and there was this one ton, you know, container, half full of port wine. So on the spot, my friend knew better than I did. I didn't know much, but he knew how to do. So we found a big copper pot, and we made a still out of, you know, a big barrel, some pipes, you know, and we made a barrel, so, and we started distilling. That was my first experience of distilling. So we made about 100 liters of vodka out of the port. We kept the heads, we kept the tails, everything, everything that was bad was in that thing, and everybody woke up with a headache the next morning. But it was my first.
Did you? Irina looks like she has a question. You have a question.
First experience.
No, not really. I'm just amazed at how it is and how it was drinkable. But it, you could drink it, actually? You could
consume
it?
Actually, you can drink it because this is what you see. This is poison because it's concentrated. You know, when you make, when you, let's say you're distilling from wine or from grape, and that methanol is there. It's just you cannot drink all of that to get that much methanol. Where when you distill it, it's concentrated, it's like in a cup, and it's like a poison. You know? So, anytime you have an alcohol, you wake up next morning and you have a headache, you want to cut your head off, you know, it's because it was not distilled properly. It has some heads or tails in it, you know. So that's the only from my experience. Maybe you know.
I never drink that much.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's a very interesting introduction to distilling and how to do things, and then learn how not to do things next time.
Oh, it's definitely. This is science. This is pure, you know. Yeah, people in villages do it
still
by word of the mouth. You know, the father tells the son, teaches the son, and the grandfather teaches the grandson, and then it goes on. But it's science.
Yeah.
It's pure, you know, science. Chemistry, physics.
So what happened to that 100 liters? Did you...
We invited a lot of friends, you know, parents. Friends.
Well, I want to find out if you guys also made a business out of it, because there's so many stories of, you know, the people who lived through that period, you know, just like myself in Armenia, you know, with everybody tried to figure out how to do something, you know, to make a little business, to sell things and, you know, to experiment.
No, absolutely not. It was purely for joy. It was for fun. You know, I was into art. I didn't even think of, you know, selling anything. They didn't even think of selling my art. I was just painting.
Going now, switching a little bit to the art. Did you? You said your family was in the art. Did you go to art school?
Yes, I went to two art schools, internship and apprenticeship with an artist, one of the very well-known artists in Armenia. All together for about 16 years.
Wow. So then you arrived to United States, and is now art or distilling your main focus of work?
No, art is, of course, is who I am, is my main focus in my life. That's what I do. But of course, you know that, you know, making a living as an artist is very hard. So I did a bunch of odd jobs the first, let's say, 5-10 years, you know, whatever I had to do. And then I found textile design, which was very close to art.
Art.
You know, still art, you know, kind of. So I did that for about 20 years. And I was very, very happy about it, you know. But then that industry kind of changed, died out slowly. They started hiring younger people with a lot less, you know, experience and a lot less money, mm-hmm. for a lot less money.
Yeah, yeah.
So the old guard kind of got left out in a way, you know. But then I got really lucky that I found my current job where I'm working right now with HFR. That's an amazing company that the only way that I can describe it is, you know, when you were a kid and, you know, when you're a girl, you play with your, you know, dolls and stuff. And when you were a boy, probably you make something. So I get paid for that right now.
Okay.
You know.
So are you playing with the dolls or you're making stuff?
No, I'm making stuff.
Well, I had to clarify, you know, because nowadays you don't know.
Sure, no. I'm making stuff.
So wanted to ask you, going back to the textile design, mm-hmm. any textiles or any companies that we know that you have designed something?
You know, usually, yes, Baby Fat probably is the one that you might know. It's the cat logo.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's, I think this black lady that owns the company, her husband, I forget their names, but her husband is a famous musician.
I see.
And she became famous. She was a model, I think. And then she started that Baby Fat, which mm-hmm. was huge in about 10 years. I don't know what's going on now.
Yeah.
But that's not how the textile company works. The companies who make textile. Mm-hmm. Oh, Walmart.
Okay.
A lot for that's Walmart.
Huge. Yeah.
But other than that, you know, companies make a lot of fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sell to whoever. You know, they can sell it to Walmart. They can sell it to private companies. You know, so but this was just a manufacturing, and I was doing the design. So, like your shirt that you're wearing right now, those pineapples, you know. And I see until now, I see a lot of women
wearing pineapple shirts.
Not pineapple shirts. Wearing the designs that I made.
Oh, that is so cool. That is awesome. Yeah.
Actually, Gary has a T-shirt that he's wearing until now that I designed. And that was way before I knew him.
That is cool. Yeah, that is to see things that you have done, you know, the work still out there, that's amazing. Going now back to, you're a very interesting person, so there's lots to going back and forth. We are sitting, like I said, in the, I called it garage, so the art studio and also the place where you distill.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the art and then looking at the pot over there, I don't know which questions to start and what to ask. So how did you then, you distilled in Armenia?
Mm-hmm.
Had fun.
At once.
So then, fast forward 2020, you decided
Fast forward COVID.
COVID. So
when everything disappeared from the stores.
Everything and meaning spirit, like
everything,
alcohol.
Like,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Paper
yeah.
towels
and toilet paper
and isopropyl and alcohol. And, you know, everybody was talking about how you have to disinfect everything, disinfect your hands, disinfect your house, disinfect the fruits that you buy, the produce and everything. So, and my wife started to panic. You know, we need alcohol, we need spirits, we need alcohol. And I said, well, you know, if we can't find any, then I can make alcohol. And
because you remembered that one
I
time.
I remember,
yeah.
I said, yeah, I know. Well, actually, theoretically, I was teaching myself constantly.
Mm.
I was reading about it, not even this thing, but I was interested in the process. I was reading. So I kind of had an idea of what's going on. So I went to Amazon and bought this Chinese-made, like, real shit, real, you know, poor quality, simple distilling machine for $150.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called a water purifying machine. Because you cannot legally buy this stuff, yeah. Water distilling machine. Anyways, it got here. I set it up. I got my propane, you know, tank, my burner, You know, and I went to Smarin Final and bought Popov vodka. Popov, and there are two kinds. I just don't remember the second one. The first one is Romanov.
Okay. Romanov and Popov vodka.
They're like about $9.
Because why don't you explain our listeners why?
Yeah.
You know, why couldn't you just use the vodka to sanitize things?
Because it's the proof is low. Vodka is 40%, and the medical alcohol, or the isopropyl, it has to be over 90 actually to disinfect.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be high proof. So I was buying this vodka, which is like $10 for 175 milliliters. And I bought I think 6 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I poured it into that thing, and I got, you know, what I distilled was about 90%, 88 to 90%, which is good enough for distilling. She was happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was having fun, you know, and that's how it started, you know. And then that it was here, you know, I started thinking, oh, maybe I can do something else, you know, for drinking. And I went and I bought those box wines, 5 liters.
Franzia,
they're filled.
Yeah.
So, and the first vodka that I made here was from
Franzia?
Yeah, Franzia or the other one, I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, Gallo, yeah.
Box wine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, some Gallo too.
Yeah.
Some Gallo too, yeah.
So
and I still have, I got the Gallo for the bottles, but then I kept the bottles.
Oh, the jugs, yeah.
The jugs, yeah.
So how was it when you
It was actually very pleasant since the beginning. I realized that I have some weird nose for finding out when the methanol is out of the vodka. You know, I smell and I mean, usually you can do different stuff. You can burn it, see how it burns. You know, when there is methanol, it burns yellow. When there is none, it burns blue, stuff like that. But I guess my nose worked best, so
you had internal training of how to be.
I started distilling and I started learning, you know, reading about how to distill. There is this guy on YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Midwest. Hops and barley and hops.
I think I watched some of his stuff.
George,
yeah.
I think his name is George.
Yeah.
That guy is amazing. So you can learn everything you need to know from him.
So what is, what kind of spirit alcohol do you enjoy that interested you to make, trying to figure out the...
Fruit-based,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we, well, first of all, let me tell you that I love to drink this stuff.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Especially the stuff that is made in Armenia is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Apricots are amazing in Armenia, as you know, and apricot brandy or vodka is fantastic. So is other stuff, you know. Mulberry is amazing, which unfortunately we cannot find here. But yeah, so I started doing that, you know, fruit seasonal, whatever
mm-hmm.
I can find. Luckily, grapes are, you know, here all the time, so you can. But other stuff, you know, I made even vodka from those Japanese
kumquat.
Uh huh. You know,
yeah.
Kumquat. It came out fantastic. So I made from kumquat. I made from
apples.
Not apples. Pear.
Pear. Uh-huh.
Peaches.
Okay.
Cranberry. Surprisingly enough, was really interesting.
Was the cranberry somewhat similar to the Cornelian cherry?
That was the idea.
That's why I asked.
There was the idea.
Yeah.
Not quite.
Uh-huh.
You know, because the Cornelian berry is amazing.
Yeah.
It was not that good. You know, I mean, flavor wise, it was good to drink.
Irina has a story to share about the Cornelian cherry you tried the first time.
Yes, the Cornelian cherry was my favorite. I think it was my favorite Armenian brandy that I tried.
We tried
mulberry. We tried several Armenian brandies and
that
Cornelian
was
cherries.
At the Guinea Fest. or
they are at the Guinea Fest, but this one was in my home, and it's the Arales, and they were there at the Guinea Fest. Yeah, it's a very good product.
Yes, it's a very good product. But let me ask you a question. So you you started distilling with the vodka and the wines, but now that you're distilling from fresh fruit, you had to learn the fermentation, the art of fermentation as well?
I learned all of that, and this is my fermentation tank that's right here that I use. I wanted to do it from grapes. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you know,
let's talk. This is a great topic that you brought up, Irina. I think we need to take a break, and we need when we come back, why don't we go into Irina's question? We can talk a little bit more detailed, maybe step by step, how you know the fermentation works, then how the distilling, and then we will start tasting.